Hello, comic book fans. We are here. We're excited to be here, and I have a huge apology. We did record 2 weeks ago as planned, and we had this great, it was like a 2 hour long discussion about annuals. We had all these great things to say, and Jen's audio did not record, and that's what we get for not doing a test each and every time for recording. As Jen said earlier, it was hubris. We let hubris get to us. So, sorry about that. Maybe we'll do another annual talk some other time, but this week it is about where does Jen get all these hipster comics? In case this is your first time listening, I'm Carrie Honey, and this is Jen Bozier, and we always say that she reads the hipster comics because she reads mostly, I guess, Image, Boom,
Dark
Titan. Dark
Horse,
Horse, Dark Horse, that's
Titan,
the big
and
one, Star
Vertigo.
Horse.
Not that Dark Vertigo is much of an indie publisher, but you know.
But it's not the typical mainstream, because when you think of comic books, you typically think of Marvel and DC, and that's what I mostly read, along with the occasional video game comic that Titan or Dark Horse puts out. But Jen reads a lot of, random comics that I'd never heard of before, and I get fascinated by it because they're really interesting stories, but I just can't add anything else to my list. I read too much as it is, and I keep adding stuff, just like Jen does too. Which is why, like, she'll find like, some of the comics that I read, she's like, that sounds interesting, but I can't read, I can't add that to mine either. So I'm just really curious, like, because with these hipster indie comics, I hate calling them hipster because that sounds so mean and degrading. But these, I guess, non-superhero comics, how do you find them? Because it just seems like there'd be so many of them. Because, I mean, DC and Marvel also do so many comics, and not just the various crossovers and everything like that, but they have so many superheroes. I mean, if you look at the entire map of the Avengers, there's. It's a ridiculous. My son has one in his room, and it's like a few hundred characters, and I don't know maybe who half of them are. So I can't imagine keeping up with that, but I just would think that so much stuff comes out because there's a lot of mini series and a lot of random stuff. So how do you pick and how do you find what you read?
So that's a good question. So it sounds, I actually get asked that a lot, like by other people when I'm talking with other people too, and I'll mention that, oh, I'm reading this comic series, and people say, I've never even heard of that, and like, oh, you should go and check it out. And I always tell people, like, the best ways to find things, and it sounds really obvious, but then on the other hand, like, even I forget to do this on occasion, because what was the series? Oh, it was actually Ed Brubaker's Fade Out. I found that like 5 or 6 issues in, and I was like, how the hell did I miss that this was a thing? So it happens. But the first thing I always tell people is to follow your favorite artists or your favorite authors on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram or whatever their social media du jour is, because they're always their biggest advocates for saying, hey, I have this series and I'm doing this and I'm doing that. And that was actually how I discovered one of my favorite comic series, American Vampire. I was reading Swamp Thing at the time, and I was like, oh my God, like, this guy, Scott Snyder, he's really good. Like, this series is amazing, and I really like his writing. And I just happened to be following him on Twitter. I started following him on Twitter, and I just happened to be on there one day when he shared out something about American Vampire, and I was like, oh my God, stop what you're doing. I'm going to go read this. And it was amazing, and I love it. And that's really like the best way to do that, right? It's like see that somebody will come out, like Ed Brubaker. He just tweeted out that, oh, I had this new series. And actually, recently Scott Snyder tweeted out that he has a new series coming out this fall. Actually, I think the first issue releases next week or maybe the week after that, called AD After Death. And of course, I've pre-ordered it because I have a problem. And as soon as I saw I had a new series, like, oh my God, I'm going to go check this out because I love Scott Snyder. And that's, you know, I joke with Carrie a lot, and I'm like, your main lie, your mainstream comics. But almost every one of the authors that I read started with one of those mainstream series. So, like, Fatale, which is one of my favorite series that I read a few several years back, written by Ed Brubaker. And Ed Brubaker is most famous for writing the Winter Soldier line on for Captain America. So most of these authors, if you start like, oh, I really like this person, I also go on to Comixology and I click on authors and see what their series that they have running is. And then my favorite recommendation, and this is the one that I always give with a, but let me explain, is if you're ever looking for a new series, just to go to Google, or, you know, if you're a crazy person, still use Bing, and search for best comic series of year. Right, like 2015, 2016. There are so many articles out there that list off the series that are on, that are really good right now, but whenever you read a best of list, I always tell people to really pay attention. Like, shameless self-plug, Carrie and I have one coming out here soon. Eventually.
Okay, like, we've already established that I suck. Alright. I know I'm very behind on stuff, but, you know, no, nobody cares, but, you know, I was sick earlier this week, and that it's pushed me behind on everything.
So it kind of takes it out of you.
I didn't even get to read my comics. You know, it's new comic book day. It's the best day ever. I didn't get to read my comics until 6 o'clock tonight.
Ugh, that
so
sucks.
It's just, you know, it's one of those things. It's how it is. But anyway, as you were saying, to beware of the
to, best you know, of. When we soon have one, you know, in my comic series, or in one of the comic series that I mentioned the Black Monday Murders, because if you've listened to this podcast at all, you know that I'm just over the moon about my mammon-worshipping bankers and demon bankers. Anyways, I'm over the moon about this series, but I do say that it is Jonathan Hickman at his Hickmaniest. So, like, if you've read series in the past and by Jonathan Hickman, you're like, you know, this is just way too dense, and it's just the long form drives me insane. Okay, maybe that's not the series for you. On the other hand, if you're reading through Carrie's list and you see the Uncanny X-Men and you think to yourself, you know, I really liked that X-Men plot line where they switched people's personalities and Sabretooth became a good guy, I think I'm going to read that. There you go. So it's always important to, like, think about what you like, because most of those best ofs will explain, hey, this is what this series is about. Because I've been, I mean, I think probably anybody who's ever read one of those lists, you've been burned by at least one series on there. I should also say that none of the series that we're putting onto our list, we're not JPEGers, JRPGers, JPEGers?
JRPGers.
I was trying to go for more peggers, but then I was like, oh, wait, that doesn't work. So we're not like JRPGers and where we're like, oh, if you read the first 20 issues, then the series gets great. No, if a series doesn't grab you in the first arc, which is usually 4 to 5 issues, it's probably not going to grab you. But that's, I mean, finding, oh, follow your favorite publishers too. Follow Image, follow Oni, follow Boom, Vertigo, and follow any of the ones that you want to, that typically have good series that you like, because they also will say, hey, next month, this is coming out. That was how I discovered Brian Vaughn's Paper Girls, which is another series I'm over the moon on.
Yes, you've been talking about that.
Yes, I love that series. That's another really good one, which actually we're not going to get to talk about tonight, because I don't think the next day, I think we'll have to talk about it next episode.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I do take a chance on new comic book day. I'll go through and like, oh, this one's on its first issue. That sounds interesting. I'll read it. We're going to talk actually about one of those this evening, Songs for the Dead. And so, it's a lot of trial and error, I'm not going to lie. I talk on here a lot about, oh my god, I found the greatest series and it's so amazing! I don't talk about a lot of the series that I'm like, yeah, I picked up 2 issues of this and that is shit, man. Like Knight's Dominion. Cough.
Yeah.
Clear. That was one that, and I will say that this does happen to me, because it was one that it was an independent publisher. It was an author that I'm lukewarm on. He has some stuff that I'm like, and other stuff that I'm like, It was a D&D fantasy universe. You got me.
Okay.
It was darker fantasy. You got me. I like where this is going. It was going to be kind of a murder mystery, thiefy cloak and dagger thing. Also, you got me.
Was it a Western?
It was not a Western.
Oh,
it was
man.
That I know, right? It's garbage. I can't stand it. I read like 2 or 3 issues and was like, we're so done with this. I'm not wasting my money on this anymore. So I read Badcom. I actually should probably do a list of like, just avoid this shit so that, you know, I can read bad comics so you don't have to.
I kind of do the same thing.
Right? Like, don't bother, Harley Quinn. Don't bother.
But by the way, since you're talking about Scott Snyder, I just wanted to throw this out there. And did you know that he is writing the All-Star Batman DC Universe Rebirth series?
I did. So Scott Snyder is actually the one who's behind the Death of the Family arc.
Oh, is he? I did not know that.
Yes. And he does a lot of Batman series, and he did a lot of Batman series. And I came to him through Swamp Thing. He did Swamp Thing, and a lot of people really malign the Rotworld arc that he did, and I thought it was amazing. I loved it. It was one of my favorite DC comic series I read in a long time, mostly because Swamp Thing. I'm totally... But, I mean, that's how I discovered him, and then that. And I had read the Winter Soldier arc, and that's how I knew about Ed Brubaker. So when they said that he was doing this grim, dark, femme fatale kind of noir series, I was like, yes. Yes, I will read that. Thank you. And then when he did the fade out, and he's like, okay, this is just like that, all the grim, dark, noir, but without the magic. Like, ooh, color me impressed.
Well, so, I think that's a very good idea. I never thought about it. You know, I mean, I do follow my favorite authors. Like right now, one of my favorite authors is Tim Seeley. He wrote Grayson, and now he's writing Nightwing. And
I love Tim Seeley.
He's a really great and humorous writer, but he's also writing Batman. And I'm like, no, I can't get into Batman. But I think all he does now, oh, he also writes Vision, and I'm not going to get into Vision. Or is that Tom King? They get confused because they both worked on Grayson, Tom King and Tim Seeley, so it gets really confusing. But you're right. I mean, if I ever saw him say, hey, I'm writing this new non-Marvel, non-DC comic, I would most likely check it out because I do like his writing. And probably the same thing with some artists. Like if Andy Kubert decided to come back and start drawing stuff, I'd be like, okay, what are you doing, dude? I will totally check that out. And I really want to, with, one of my favorite artists is, I can't think of his name, it's not Mikael Janin, although he's great too, but he's doing Batman, just can't read Batman, Rocafort, Kenneth Rocafort.
Oh, right, yes.
Yes, I don't understand his art, how he does it, but it's just so beautiful. Like, most of his comic book art graces my iPad and my Nook and my cell phone and everything, but, he's doing something new, and I need to look into that to see what else he's doing. The problem is with going with the artist is that I may love the art, like you like Yannick Paquette.
Paquette, I love him,
but it doesn't mean that the story's gonna be any good.
That's a very real problem. I've actually lucked out twice now. I picked up Batgirl because of Raphael Albuquerque. I picked up a series called 8. That had Raphael Albuquerque, and the author, I didn't really have an opinion on, but I picked it up because I was like, oh my god, Raphael Albuquerque, I love him, and that series was fantastic. It kind of ended, I'm not really sure what they're doing with that series right now, if I'm being totally honest, but there was a series, I picked it up a few years ago because somebody was writing for it, and I was like, or drawing for it, and I was like, oh my god, this is bad, I just couldn't handle it.
Well, I mean, but, and the same thing I think goes for, you know, authors, good authors, and they'll have not, I can't say bad artists, but art that doesn't appeal to me.
Yes.
And sometimes, you know, art, it'll kill me no matter how good the story is. I'm just like, I can't deal with this art. Like, I'll talk about this when we get to our, what we've been reading, but a new Cyborg came out today, and I was reading that during my son's karate class, and I don't know what happened, but halfway through the comic, the art style completely changed.
I hate when that happens.
And I was looking through the beginning, I was like, was there 2 artists? No, only 1 artist is given credit. But it's like, did he have a stroke? I mean, what happened? It was the weirdest thing, and things like the art was fine in the beginning, and it went to this really weird new style, kind of the prismy looking art,
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and that just, that kind of hurt, that kind of killed it. And the worst thing about it was that the arc was really good, but then I stopped being interested in reading the story because the art distracted me. I had the same thing with The Flash a couple of weeks ago. Like some of the faces, I was like, what is wrong with their faces? Who's drawing it like that? And it kind of, made me pull back from it. So it's amazing, like with comic books, which is, I think, the point of comic books is that you have to have both. You need the good story,
Right.
and you need art that appeals to you.
It's true. And there's a new that series that I actually just mentioned, and I'm trying to look it up really quick because I cannot remember who the artist is on that AD. I love Scott Snyder. I'm not really crazy about the artist, and they released a preview for it. I think it's on the back of Moonshine. Yeah, I think it was on the back of Moonshine, which we'll talk about tonight. It was on there, and I don't like the art. And if we're being totally honest here, that might make or break it for me. Like, and I know that I'm trying to find this artist's name. It's not like it's terrible art, it's just not my style. Yeah, like I guess we'll see. We'll see.
I just don't feel comfortable saying that they're bad artists because obviously they're better than anything I can do. I mean, they do have faces and hair, and you can see expressions and all that. They do better than most people who call themselves artists. It's just not art that appeals to me personally.
And some of the stuff, like one of the artists that I really like is Becky Cloonan. I really like her style. It's a little anime-ish. I totally get that. I've read a lot of criticisms of her stuff, and yeah, okay, that's fair. But she did a series of books several years ago that were some of the best things I've ever read in comics. One was called The Mire. And I'm pretty sure the Meyer is the one that won just a million awards. And it was very, very good. But my favorite one was, I'm also trying to pull it up, and of course I'm having just a hell of a time doing anything tonight. I'm just a hot mess all the time now. It was the last one she did, and I can't think of what it was called, but I love it. I love the story, I love the art, I think it's great, but I have heard people say that I don't really like her style. Ah, here it is. Demeter. That's what it's called. Demeter. And it's about a woman who her husband is a fisherman and he goes out to sea and his ship wrecks and he drifts back home to his wife. And they live together by the sea. And it's kind of the story of him piecing together what happened to him. And it's very dark, but I love the art. I think it's amazing. And I know some people don't love it, but that's why when people are like, oh, Becky Cloonan sucks, I'm like, no, she doesn't. No, she doesn't. You just don't like her art style. And likewise, when I complain about this particular artist and after death, I'm sure there's people going to be like, no, that art is beautiful. And I'll be like, I'm so sorry.
I mean, but that's the fun thing about being a critic is that, this is going to shock some people, but your opinion, when you review something, it is an opinion and it is
Yes.
subjective.
It is entirely subjective. Which is why I always try to give as much a description as I can as possible when it comes to when I'm reviewing something to present it like, hey, look, here's some of the problems that I have with it. But then sometimes if you ever, like, and I always do this when I read reviews, like somebody might be, oh my God, this is terrible, this is awful, and I'm reading it, and I'm like, actually, I would probably like that. That sounds like something that'd be up my alley. I could actually point directly to, I read. And I'm still not sure what this person was smoking, and I need to go back and find this review. I'm just lazy and don't ever actually do it because I'm not an internet rager, even though I want to rage at this person. I had read a review of Stranger Things before we watched it, and they were like, oh my God, it's just so terrible. All it does is make these 80s references and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, actually, that all sounds really up my alley, so I'm going to go check this out now. And sure enough, I loved it. But that's not about comics this evening. Oh no. And so,
Oh, I
and
saw
tonight.
a Stranger Things graphic novel at Barnes and Noble the other day.
Man, you found all kinds of fun things at Barnes and Noble.
Yes, does everybody know that Stephanie Meyer, the Twilight author, is writing adult books? I nearly tripped
I
over
guess.
myself when I saw that. I was like, that can't be the same Stephanie Meyer, but the name's because she spells Stephanie weird.
She does.
So I picked it up and read it through, and it was talking about how this is her first adult book, and I was like, well, I don't think it's her. And then I got to the back, it's like she, broke the records with her Twilight series. I was like, and done.
And we're done here.
And put it back on the shelf. Yep.
Right.
You know what else I saw? Ton the graphic novel section. Tons of books about everything you need to know about The Watchmen and the prequels for The Watchmen. I didn't even look at what that meant, but I think like word is getting out about what's going on in DC, and so now they're flooding Barnes and Noble's graphic novel section with The Watchmen stuff.
I'm so good. I know we've talked about it in here before. I'm not a fan. I'm just not a fan of The Watchmen. And I can back that up. Like, it's not just me being like, oh, hater, 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 hater. Like, no, I can explain why I don't like it. I just don't like it. And but you found all kinds of fun stuff there. Just all kinds of things I never needed to know about, like Stephanie Meyer continuing to have a literary career. I guess all of her tween fans are grown up now and they need more. Anyways, moving on.
Well,
Actually,
I guess, at least they're not romances, so there's a start.
there is that. So kind of moving on in that direction, in terms of series we've been reading this month. I started reading that Spell on Wheels. Do you see what they did there? Because they're witches, you see, and they're on a road trip.
I get it.
Yeah. So if you took the craft and mixed it with, I guess, a little bit of practical magic and supernatural, you would have Spell on Wheels. It's somebody basically said, hey, I like all three of these things. I'm just going to pour them into a blender and see what comes out. And it's good, but it's not great. And I mean, it's okay to have a light and fluffy series. Like, I read so much grim, dark demon banker stuff that, like, I need demon worshipping banker stuff that I need that kind of light and fluffy in my life. But, and it's okay to, like, blend stuff because a lot of times there's a lot of, like, some of my favorite board games are games where they took, like, little pieces from all these other games and made one big game. And, that's cool, but you need to kind of make it rise above that. And Spell on Wheels, it's not totally doing that yet. So I'm not really, I'm not,
So you're
I
not in
like
love with
it.
it, but you're not ready to bail either.
Yeah, I'm somewhere, like I was joking with you when I reviewed it, I'm somewhere between yep and meh. Like, yeah. It could, I mean, if they can stick the landing and if it gets interesting, okay, this might become a really good series, but it could also slide into, no. It's not totally grabbing me yet.
That's a shame considering, the first issue. I mean, you never said it was fantastic. You just said the potential is there for this to be
Yes.
great. And so
And
it's a
I
shame
still
that
feel
so,
that.
it's, but it's a shame that they're not tapping into the potential yet, I guess.
Yeah, and they're trying to be like a girl positive, but like they're falling into some weird pitfalls, I guess. One of the things I do like about it that I will say is that the art is good, but I love the character design. One of the characters, Claire, she is a oh, that just dawned on me. There's like 80s reference, and I'm sure of it, or maybe not. Claire is a psychic, and she's a bigger girl. Like, she's drawn as being, she's the tallest of the group. She's probably almost 6 feet tall. And she's just a bigger built girl. And she's just kind of fun. Like, and she's, pretty unapologetic, and she's a psychic, I guess. But it's fun. She's not there like as the comedic relief,
Okay, good.
which is typically
Which is
what.
what I was, it sounded like that's where you were going.
Yeah, and that was pretty exciting to me. She's not the comedic relief. She's not raunchy, because that seems to be lately that, hey, guess what? Fat girls can be raunchy. cool, I guess. That seems to be every single character now that's being presented. She, she's just
pretty
kind
raunchy
of...
skinny girls. Just saying.
Right. I mean, granted, I do kind of live that stereotype of being the raunchy one and the cussy one, but, like, it's good. I like it. They kind of, they're like, hey, we have this character, but we're not going to do what everybody else is doing with her right now. So I was like, oh, that's good. I like that. That's good. And that's my, looking at this, oh, no, I actually have three female-centric books to talk about. This one, I think you just have Mockingbird, don't you?
Yeah, that's the big one. Like, because I'm still behind on Wonder Woman, and Thor hasn't come out yet.
With the sentient hammer, because there's two of them.
Yeah, you know. just don't, man.
Sorry. I'm sorry.
No, you're not. That's fine. Because it is kind of a joke.
Well, I'm sorry that I'm not sorry.
So I'm looking through. Oh, and I forgot Superwoman and Supergirl came out last week. I should talk about... I don't know about Supergirl. No, I'll talk about Supergirl and Superwoman. Supergirl is one of those that I am so glad that I did not base this off of the summary, because the summary was ridiculous. Like, here's the summary for number one. Blah, 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 Supergirl is back and working for the DEO. As Kara Danvers, average American teenager and high school student, Supergirl must balance her life as superhero with her new life on Earth. Boring.
Yes.
But some demons from her Kryptonian past are coming back to haunt her. Boring. And Kara will find herself face to face with her father, the sinister cyborg Superman. Okay, right there it's like, okay, this is boring and this is ridiculous. But for whatever reason, I decided, what the hell? I'm reading Superwoman, and I like the TV show Supergirl, so let's check out what Supergirl is up to. And I have really, really enjoyed this series.
You have been enjoying it. Like, yeah. I remember you were shocked by it.
Yeah, like, really surprised. Like, because if you had told me that I was going to be reading a comic about zombie cyborg Superman.
Jesus, why?
And liking it, I would have had Jen's reaction. Like, Jesus, why? But
why?
But the thing about it, what I really love about it, is that it's not focusing on Kara as a superhero. It's focusing on her with her loss of family, which is a lot for a teenage girl to go through.
It is.
So here's, you know, I mean, she's been on Earth for a while, but she lost her superpowers. Now the DEO has brought them back, and now they're like, well, now that we got your powers back, you're going to go be with this family, which is a married couple who happens to be agents. And then it's like dumped her there. Like, you have to be here. This is part of, you know, us helping you. And she's not happy about that. Her cousin Clark just died. The original Clark Kent. He died. And so now she feels even more alone. The last family she has is gone. Mm-hmm. And she refuses to acknowledge the alternate universe Clark Kent that has come in. She doesn't want to deal with that. And so when this cyborg Superman comes down, who she has fought before in their past, and she finds out this is actually her father, Zor-El, who's been, you know, brought back to life using the cyborg technology, she feels this need to find family. And it's actually very heartbreaking. I know it sounds ridiculous, but it's actually, the way that they have it, it's very heartbreaking.
Right.
Just because she's so desperate to find this family. And he told her that he's rebuilt Argo City. And she's like, how? Like, you know, planet kind of went boom. But she goes out there to find, you know, see what he has. Well, her adopted mother agrees. She's like, no. I'm going with you. This is not happening. So they go out there. Adopted mother crashes because of the gravity. And so she's trying to find where Kara is. Kara learns that he has reanimated everybody from Argo City with the same technology, but they're not really alive. They're, you know, still robots, because he needs, like, a life force. She's like, this is not what I wanted. He's like, but didn't she want Argo City back? She's like, not like this.
That's dark as fuck, man.
Well, he finds her adopted mother on their little planet, or their little art. It's basically, it's like think of Asteroid M from the X-Men, so it's kind of like, you know, on this, this asteroid. And they take the life force from her to bring her mother back to life. So, and now she's going to have, so, and then he sends the rest of the cyborgs down to Earth to harvest all of their life. So now Kara's going to have to choose between her family, who it's, and then her new family. So, I mean, I know the whole story sounds ridiculous, and I totally admit that. It's as ridiculous as Demon Bankers. Sorry.
Hey, no, you know what? Like, I have to laugh, right? Like, when right. You're like, oh, zombie cyborgs, and I'm like, devil worshiping. Shut up.
Yeah, you know. So
I get it.
Yeah. So, but I think it's one reason why we like comics so much is that they take such ridiculous ideas and they still put together a really good, you know, heartwarming or dark or really deep story into it. And that's one thing I really loved about Supergirl is that it's right now this current arc is about her finding her family and accepting who her family is. And, you know, mm-hmm. and you don't have to be a teenager to understand that. I think anybody, everybody goes through that, especially if they've had a loss in their family.
Absolutely.
So take care of that with Superwoman. I don't have a fucking clue what's going on with Superwoman, man. And just, yeah.
That's not good.
No, I mean, Lex Luthor's sister has, like, I don't know, and she's now Ultra Woman, and she's got these bizarro clones with her, and she's kidnapped Lex and put him, like, in a time slip space so that nobody can hear him or find him, and then she's going out to, like, basically destroy all of Metropolis. So Lana Lang is trying to figure out what's going on with her because she's dying from these superpowers.
Mm-hmm.
But then in the middle of her trying to figure this all out, this woman comes bursting through and I had to look her up. It's like somebody 13, Katie 13. I don't remember. 13 came through and she's like, I just came back from the future. We have to stop Lena. And it's like, okay, whatever.
We're done here.
No, but I put this in my review, but my biggest problem with this last Superwoman was Lana started having these visions of Lois talking to her, like she's with her and talking to her.
Mm-hmm.
And Lana, she says in issue one that she started having anxiety attacks after Clark died. And so she's taking pills. And so, which is no big deal. It's like, she's like, it's not that big of a deal. And Lois is like, no, it's not that big of a deal. I'm glad you got help. Well, that now we're in issue, what, 4 or 5, and Lana takes them. And Lois said, she's like, I thought you said that those weren't a big deal. And she's like, well, they're not. And Lois goes, then why haven't you told John, which is her live-in boyfriend?
Mm-hmm.
And she said, I'm afraid of what he'll say to me. And then she looked down and she said, I'm not afraid of that. I'm afraid that I will admit that they helped me more than him. And I kind of got pissed.
Ouch.
Because taking pills for your anxiety problems does not mean you don't need people in your life. It does not mean that the person in your life is not the person that you're supposed to be with. It doesn't mean they're a bad person. It doesn't mean you don't need them. So I was like, okay, you know, with all the stigma with it is, you know, treating, mental conditions, like this just totally rubbed me the wrong way.
Oh yeah, that's no.
And you know, and as someone who is actually on anti-anxiety medication, I have never once thought that, you know, that my husband wasn't enough to help me. And but okay, you know what? He wasn't. I had a neurological problem. He can't fix that.
Well, I was just about to say, like, that kind of implies, like, look, you need people to fix this for you. Like, that.
Right.
That kind of implies a fundamental misunderstanding of how all that works.
Right. I mean, you need the people for your support group, but when it's a neurological problem, and her panic attacks, I mean, they're most likely, they are neurological, but they're from trauma. I mean, seeing your best friend die in front of you, that's trauma. Seeing Lois die right in front of you, that'd make anyone kind of go crazy. And they would, you know, have panic attacks or high anxiety or whatever. But to say that she's afraid to tell him because then it means that that he's not enough, just like,
No, you're losing me on that one.
Yeah. So there's like, I forgot, like I read those last week. There was two of my girl comics. The other one was a Mockingbird that I read yesterday while I was dying in bed.
And how was it?
So, Mockingbird, I picked up because, well, for two reasons. One, there was a Twitter hubbub about it.
And it you was, may have heard something about that.
Yeah, and all they were doing, they were showing the cover of the recent issue, which had Mockingbird wearing a t-shirt that says, "Ask me about my feminist agenda." And people were just up in riot act, and it turned out that was the last issue because the comic wasn't selling well, so Marvel cut it. And people attacked the author so much for how she wrote Mockingbird that she ended up deleting her account on Twitter. And this was her very first comic book to write. She writes novels, and she loved this experience. So I was like, okay, I got to see what this is all about, because this seems ridiculous. And because then I saw, so my second reason is I didn't know who Mockingbird was. I mean, the only time I've seen her was in Lego Marvel's Avengers, and she's one of the extra characters you can unlock. And I was like, seriously, how many fucking people does the Avengers have? No, I just shouldn't ask. Let's just move on. I unlocked her. Yay. Got my 100%. Let's move on. But when I saw that Mockingbird is Bobby Morse, that got me intrigued because I used to watch Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and Bobby Morse is probably one of my favorite characters on that show, and they wrote her out.
Right.
And that was kind of, that was not the downfall, but that was the start of my downfall with the show when they got rid of her. But I didn't realize that she was actually Mockingbird. She used to be an Avenger. She was a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent. And so I was like, I'm fascinated by this. So yesterday when I was dying in bed, I decided to, you know, it was only 8 issues. The whole thing had been canceled. I bought them all.
Right.
And I sat there, okay, I'll read it. I don't get why people are so mad. I really don't. Yes, it does.
What a shock.
It does bring up feminist issues, but it does it in a way that makes sense with her character and kind of goes with the flow. Like there's this, you know, because she talks about how that ever since she's a little girl, she wanted to be a superhero. So she's like, I exposed myself to radiation. She's like, I got 54 x-rays in 1 year. And I got, you know, it's like, I went and got bit by all these spiders and did all these things. And she said, and then I realized that the problem was not, you know, I wasn't chosen. It was because I was the wrong gender. And it had, like, the original Avengers, which was Iron Man, Hulk, Captain America, Thor, and Ant-Man. So she's right. Like, so there wasn't any room for a woman. She's like, so she said, so what I learned when I grew up was after I got my PhD in biochemistry and biology, and I became a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent, I learned that it didn't take a Y chromosome to be a superhero. It just takes balls. Which
right.
I loved that line. And so she's like, so hey, we got girl superheroes now. Look at all of us. That's it, ladies. We won the war. We're equal. Yeah, no, we're not. And there was a lot that was super humorous because she's very sarcastic. Unfortunately, the first 5 issues took this really interesting arc, and it left it open for so much, and now I'm never going to see what happens next, because apparently that's when they ended it. So the next 3 issues are hysterical, because I think she knew she had 3 issues to go, and she was just like, let's go nuts. Right, let's just have some fun. And that last issue, oh my god. So the last 3 issues, she's invited on a cruise. And it was to the Bermuda Triangle. And so like the opening, like the inside issue was like the, you know, the Daily Cruise newsletter, and it's written by the head editor of the comic. And it would, because they're going through the Bermuda Triangle, it's like likelihood of kidnapped by aliens 80% today. And you know, just just little random stuff like that. And she had no idea why she was there. There was a cosplay convention going on. So she's like, yes, it's really weird to see everybody dressed up like my ex-husband, who is, you know, on trial for murdering Bruce Banner.
So, right.
And she runs into Lance Hunter, who she's, you know, kind of on and off again sleeping with. And she's like, are you here for the cosplay convention? He's like, no, I'm for the corgi convention. There's actually a corgi lover convention, because he does get a corgi a few issues back. And he's wearing this awesome t-shirt that has a corgi butt, and it says, I'm nuts about corgi butts.
amazing.
So the reason why she's there is because the Phantom Rider, who kidnapped her way back when she was married to Hawkeye, mm-hmm. He's there to stalk her once again. And, I mean, I sent you some images, and it just gets ridiculous. Like, he summons...
It looks so silly.
He summons ghost pirates out of the ocean to take care of her, and he's like, you need to kill everybody on the ship but her, and they're like, whoa, dude, like, we... No, like, we don't... That's not cool. It's like, but you're pirates. They're way to stereotype. And then they just leave. And so, when she defeats the Phantom Rider, and she falls into the ocean, and she... they can't find her. She's rescued by mer corgis. So it's little corgis with mermaid tails.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
That would be amazing.
Yes, it really is. And it's just one of those things, like, I mean, seriously, like, she knew this was it, and because she even, like, she wrote a letter at the very end of the comic, and she said that she knew this was her last comic, so she wanted to go over the top, so she was throwing in all these ideas for the script, figuring maybe half of them would get cut, and her editor wrote her back, said, this is the most ridiculously awesome script I've ever read. We're doing it.
That is amazing.
It really, really is. So, I mean, it has everything that I like as a badass female. It's a superhero comic. And it's funny. Yes, it did get into the super silly, but I think if it wasn't canceled, it wouldn't have gone that silly. Mm-hmm. I mean, she still would have been dealing with her ex-husband, on trial and all that, but it may not have been, you know, on a cruise with everyone dressed up as Hawkeye and the Hulk and
right.
And ghost pirates and mer-corgis and... Although, I admit...
No, mer-corgis!
I really do want Lance Hunter's t-shirt. Just nuts about corgi butts.
That is hilarious.
I really want... Yeah. All right, so I mean, the only thing I can think of is that people who hated it, I guess you don't like funny. That's the only thing I can think of.
Right, and some people are like, this needs to be super serial, right? Like, this needs to be very serious, and some people really don't like that. And I don't understand, because there's room for both,
there
right?
There is. I mean, Nightwing is like that. Captain America, Sam Wilson is like that. Cyborg is like that. Green Arrow tried. The Flash, sort of, is like that. I mean, the really funny thing about Nightwing, I mean, this week, like, Nightwing, the story is getting really meh, but there's so much humor in it. Like, the current Superman, who's the alternate universe, Clark Kent, comes to talk to Nightwing. And there's this great panel where Nightwing says, I just don't get in. I just don't try to understand all this alternate universe stuff. Love that. And there's also another great panel where there's these two guys who are, I forget what they're doing, but they're sitting there and they're talking and they're telling a story and talking about how he's like, yeah, so then I realized, wait, your mom's name is Martha? My mom's name is Martha. We totally can't kill each other now. Like, oh my god. Which, if you guys don't know, that's from Batman versus Superman. It's like... So, I mean, you're talking about DC comic making fun of a DC movie. So that... And then also DC comic making fun of this whole idea of the alternate universe thing. And it does that, like, all throughout. So that was, like, the... Probably one of the nice things I'll have to say about Nightwing lately. I don't know what DC is doing with any of this, but...
There's times when I'm reading the series and I'm like, I don't think DC knows what they're doing. Just throwing that out there.
Maybe not, especially like with stuff that's going on with Flash. I mean... I didn't write my review of Flash 2 weeks ago because I didn't care. Like, that's how I came out of there going, wow. I know I should write about how mad this is, but I'm lacking so much motivation to do so. Yeah.
Yeah, that's not good.
No.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. So what else you got?
Let's see. Sticking on the girl kick for now, I have Songs for the Dead, which is a series that I picked up because there's a couple of things that I'm a real sucker for in series. One of them is the bad character who's actually good. It's basically the Hellboy archetype, right? Where I'm this, technically I should be evil, but I want to be good and I want to help people. And it's definitely a trope, but it's one that I always like, right? Because I was a huge Hellboy fan when it first came out. I've always loved Hellboy. So I like the evil character trying to be good trope. And then I'm always a sucker for somebody who's first getting into comics, and this is like their first thing. And so I picked it up, and also because since Rat Queens went on hiatus, there is this just void in my heart for a good, solid sword and sorcery D&D style series. And I want to make it clear that Songs of the Dead is definitely not in the same vein as Rat Queens. It's not that irreverent, in-your-face, fun humor that they had, but it is that, hey, we have this really strong female character, and we're in a fantasy world, and we're kind of tongue-in-cheek pointing, like, the beginning of the series, or the beginning of the issue, she's in a town, and she's pulling off the jobs off the job board for, like, questing. And she's like, oh, I don't want any rewards for the quests. It's kind of funny. It's just little stuff like that where you're like, okay, that works, right? Mm-hmm. And she meets up with a partner, a new friend, and then now they're going to go and have their adventures. And my favorite part of it is that she has a squirrel that she's a necromancer. If I haven't mentioned this, she's a necromancer. She has a squirrel that she has reanimated as a pet. And it's, like, missing half of its fur and its skin, and it's clearly... And yet, it's adorable. So, like, her little undead squirrel pet. So she's the necromancer who's trying to be nice, and she wants to help people. But she's unmistakably a necromancer. She raises dead bodies to help her fight stuff.
Well, so, like, what about Diablo? I mean, necromancers and Diablo...
That's true. That is true. Yes, that is true. So yeah, I like that concept. I just like necromancers. They're kind of fun in that evil kind of way. Anyways, so that's it. It looks, it's hard to say. It's one issue. It's like a pilot. It's definitely a setup of, okay, now she's going to go on the road, and now you've seen all the things she can do. I'm not sure. It's another series that I think is either going to be really trite and boring, or it could be really good. So check back with me next year on it. After a few, I think after the first arc, I'll be able to say whether or not, what I really feel about it. But this first issue definitely left me intrigued.
Okay.
And the other lady, the lady series I'm reading is Lady Killer, which we have talked about in this a lot. And this issue, you know, I think I've mentioned in reviews and on here before that Lady Killer, this is the second arc that they did. They did an arc last year, and now they're doing this one. I wasn't sure where it was going. Josie Schuler, the contract killer for hire, who's also the perfect 1960s suburban mom, she's set out into business for her own, and she's working with this man, Irving, who is her disposal crew. And it's kind of been this, like, he's been just a little too eager to help her. So we've kind of had this, I'm not sure what's going on here. And then this issue, they kind of revealed that Irving used to be a serial killer. He, because this takes place in the 60s, and as you've probably guessed from the last name, Schuler, someone's German in the family, and it's revealed that Josie Schuler's mother-in-law, who can't stand her and disapproves of her, used to be a pretty high-up pencil pusher for the Nazi party. And they were hunting down a man who was helping people escape Germany. And it was this Irving. And they track him down, and it turns out that he wasn't helping them escape so much as luring them back to his house, taking all their stuff and killing them. So that's a little dark, right? And I'm not sure, and this, it could be really interesting, right? Like, it could be interesting because Josie obviously is like, oh my god, that's horrible. But the first few pages of the issue are her talking about how happy she is that now that she's working with Irving, she can just murder people to her heart's content, and he deals with all the aftermath.
Wow.
Right? So, like, I'm wondering if there could be a really deep thing to say here that, well, okay, you're able to justify that it's okay when you do it because you're getting paid for it. He was just doing it for the lulz. Right?
Right.
So, and it's interesting to me that in this, because I've mentioned that throughout the series, they've put so much emphasis on the fact that they have this perfect, idyllic 1960s suburban home, and everything's perfect, and they have all the Tupperware, and her daughters go to ballet, and she wears all the perfect dresses, and her husband's in sales, and, you know.
She's Donna Reed.
Exactly, she's Donna Reed. But in this suburban home, you have three people of like tendencies who have all congregated. You have an ex-pencil pusher for the Nazis. You have a contract killer. And then you have a serial killer who's been cleaning up her bodies, right? All of them within this little suburban home. So it's interesting. And Joelle Jones, she planted a seed for why this could be problematic, other than just, well, I kill for money and you kill for fun, so we're totally different. I'm really interested to see where this is going to go. It's one of those moments, and I'm hoping it's going to be one of those things that if you really paid attention, right, it'll pay off. So I guess we'll see. But yes, it remains one of my favorite, because it's so fucking stylish. The series, like, the art is just great. I'll have to send you one of the panels. There's a panel in which she is gleefully bringing a cleaver down on a man's head, and in the next scene, she's pouring herself coffee, and she has the little frilly apron tied around her dress while there's a man bleeding to death next to her.
Has she choked anyone with her pearls yet?
She hasn't, no. That does need to happen. That would actually be really awesome. I should write in. Please have her choke someone with the pearls. But it is, I loved the series. It's not very, very unflinching.
Or poison someone with her meatloaf.
So amazing. Oh, she just shows up. Like, I think I told you in the first series last year, one of my favorite scenes is she hosts a Tupperware party. And then she kills someone afterward, and she uses the Tupperware to dispose of the body.
Makes sense to me.
And then another time she shows up at a woman's house to kill her under the guise of being an Avon saleswoman.
That's awesome. I knew those Avon ladies were crazy.
Right. And she has a little pillbox hat. I'm a sucker for pillbox hats. And it just, yeah. Oh, God, I just love this series so much. It's just, it's probably the... Yeah, I think it feels safe saying it's probably the funnest series I'm reading, despite the fact that it's also one of the darker series that I'm reading. But it's just fun.
I mean, look at all these fun ways we've already thought about how, you know, Donna Reed could kill somebody.
Right? I actually do kind of wonder, like, how much of this started as a, hey, wouldn't it be cool if, and then evolved into this really great series that's working really well. I'm really enjoying it. And I think I think the other ones I have are male-centric. So let's bounce over back to you. I think you had a cyborg that you've been, like, head over heels over.
Yeah, so I think I mentioned last time, which, you know, has gone to the nether region.
You remember last time, don't you? Of course. Right. God, go listen to it.
You know what? That's so fitting for the fact we talked about annuals. Remember that one time when we talked about... Right? Now we're going to bring it into canon?
Wasn't that conversation just amazing?
Oh, okay. So,
actually.
Yeah, it really was. But so Cyborg, Jen and our friend Larry and I made like this agreement for reading...
Suicide Pact.
Almost literally. Reading some of the DC Universe Rebirth comics. And Larry got Suicide Squad... Jen got Harley Quinn, and I got Cyborg. And the funny thing is, because, like, nobody wanted Cyborg at all. I was like, well, I guess I'll take Cyborg, because I like him on Teen Titans, you know, whatever. And Jen, after we agreed on this, Jen's like, oh my gosh, watch it, Carrie has the good one. And Larry goes, oh, there's no way. Well, I didn't get the good one. Yeah, Larry, like, begged us to let him go from Suicide Squad after about 3 issues. And then Jen's like, oh, can I please get rid of Harley Quinn? And we're like, yeah, sure. So, Yeah, so Cyborg, I had no idea what to expect. And it's another one that's kind of about finding family. And it's also about him trying to come to terms with who he is, what his body is, and does he have a soul? Is there a purpose for him being here? Why is he even brought back to life? And so it's been a lot of been like a lot of that, but it's also had some lots of humor. So like right now what is going on is he's trying to deal with some inner demons, about whether he has a soul or not, and what's going on with his dad. Does his dad really love him and all that? But the big twist is that his dad has been kidnapped and been replaced by another cyborg unit. We don't know who he is, what he's doing, what his purpose is, but he's basically out to pretty much torment and destroy Vic. The cool thing, but right before this issue four, Vic, he learned that when he had this accident, his father, to ease some of the trauma, they didn't wipe his memories, but they took all of his memories before the accident and just kind of like put him, like filed them away where he couldn't get them just because he didn't want all this trauma. Well, he runs into an ex-girlfriend from high school that he does not remember. And as he's trying to go through his memories and figure this out, all he remembers was that he broke up with her, and he's like, "Man, I was a jerk to her. Why?" And all he told her was like, "I love somebody else. I don't love you anymore." And she runs away crying, and he's like, "Well, who's this other woman?" But he can't see her face in his memories, and she and the basically he's like, he, long story, but he has this moment where he's actually kind of talking to his memories because he gets trapped in his own head, and she's like, "You can't see me because you're protecting yourself." And it, then there's a then it drops a big clue of who that other woman was, which I just went when that happened.
Oh my
So
goodness.
yeah, so I am 100% in, and it just keeps getting better and better. I love the way that they're showing Cyborg's humanity, his own self-doubt he has with the Justice League, like why he's even there. So all that has been absolutely great. And then also this week was Captain America, Sam Wilson, and that was very interesting because it's like he because last issue he was Steve Rogers kind of tricked him into letting a senator die, and Sam Wilson's having a hard time with that. He doesn't realize what Steve did, that Steve was really behind that. And of course now the whole world is blaming him. He has no idea what to do with himself in his life. So his compatriot Falcon's like, "Why don't we go out on the town?" So he's like, "Okay, fine, I need a night off." Well, they go and watch pro wrestling. And these older characters from the Marvel Universe, Battlestar and Demolition Man, go out there and wrestle. And then the whole thing was for a charity event because they're no longer wrestlers. And they find out that the guys running it are actually stealing the charity money. And so
Yikes!
Sam's like, "I'm going to go after them." And the Falcon's like, No. Just stay here and watch." And the two wrestlers, because they're former superheroes, they see this, they stop the fight, and they go after him and tackle him. And then the whole crowd kind of jumps in.
That's awesome.
And Sam, like, he's like, he's like, "I really needed this tonight. I really needed to see people of all genders and of all races and of all cultures all coming together to watch one event and then all binding together to stop evil from happening." He's like, "I know this is not going to change what's going on right now. We're still going to be divisive. We still have all those issues to take care of, but it's so great to see that when it matters, we can all come together and fight as one." And that is all this issue was about. It was like Sam Wilson's taking a day off and he gets to see some awesome bits of humanity. Which is one thing I've loved about this whole Sam Wilson thing is that it's been about humanity and him struggling with being Captain America and everyone saying, "No, take back the shield," and him not even knowing that Steve Rogers has totally betrayed him because he's been brainwashed into working for Hydra. And so Marvel's actually killing it for me. Versus DC, like another thing that came out today was an annual
Oh, right.
for Uncanny X-Men, and I'm just like, and I read it today, and I'm wondering why the hell this was an annual, because this is actually canon of what is going on in the current story. And then at the very end, they stuck in 5 pages of a random interlude with a random mutant doing a random thing somewhere else.
Well, there you go. There's your randos.
It had nothing to do with the first part of the annual. I don't know. I really don't know. And the thing is, I have this feeling, though, because this was about Domino, who is now a mercenary. And I have a feeling it's going to be, you know, well, what she did will come back, like, you know, maybe 10 issues from now. They'll be like, oh, yeah, remember when Domino did this and that, you know, our annual number one? Yeah, we're going to talk about that now.
Awesome. And you know that's going to happen, too.
Oh, yes, it totally is. But again, like, the annual, you have to have this annual to understand the rest of the comic, because something major happens in this annual that's all part of the whole overall plot. So I don't understand why that was an annual. If you wanted to put the little thing of Domino there, then have like a random little subplot at the end of a regular comic if you just want to throw that in for the lulls. I don't understand why you have to have this separate thing called an annual. Doesn't make any sense to me.
Right. If only we had a podcast in which we discussed annuals.
I know. Well, that's it.
I know.
That's it for me. What else? Do you have anything else?
I do. Let's see. Looking at my list here. I have... So, this one. Moonshine. I have. Which, as you start to read things that I write or that I review and stuff, there are certain things that I gravitate toward. And one of the things, I like Westerns, obviously, but I also like, I love the 20s, 30s Prohibition era stories. Boardwalk Empire was one of my favorite TV series. In fact, I think it was in the middle of season two or toward the end of season two when I basically texted Carrie one night and was like, stop what you're fucking doing and watch this show. I promise you will love it. And she did. But it's a thing that I really like. And I liked in the late 90s, Brian Azzarello did a series for Vertigo called 100 Bullets. And it was a kind of one of those hard-boiled noir, very ultra-violent series. And so when I saw that he was doing this Moonshine one, okay, 30s Prohibition gangsters, all right. And it's about a Joe Masseria who sends down one of his people, Lou Perlow. He sends him down to Appalachia because there's a man named Hiram Holt, a hillbilly, brewing moonshine, basically. It's his own type of alcohol that they call lightning because it ain't slow. Because you drink it fast. Anyways, they had that moment, and I was like, yes, I also saw what you did there.
Do they drink it in a flash?
They, like, chug it at one point. Like, a guy's just like pouring back mason jars, and he's like, why is this so good? So he goes down there thinking that, okay, you know, we're going to deal with some backwoods hicks and we'll flash them a little bit of money and tell them we want to buy 600 bottles for mason jars from them and, you know, go about our merry way. And they get down there and he realizes that these people are a little smarter than he gave them credit for. Like, you know, maybe not everyone from Appalachia's sister humping moron. And, but there's also something supernatural going on down there. There's a, dun, what looks dun, to be...
Dun.
Dun, dun, dun. There's what appears to be a werewolf on the loose. So you now have werewolves, one of my favorite things, and Prohibition gangsters. And it's one of those things that when I read it, like when I first heard of it and I read the first issue, I was like, mother of God, why the fuck not? Like, why not have this? So I was trying to explain it to my husband, and I had said, you know, oh, it's werewolves. Like, what the shit? Why is there a werewolf in the Prohibition era? Why isn't there? That's a better question. Why has there never been? Why weren't there werewolves in Boardwalk Empire? I don't know. So,
You know what? Werewolves might have helped that last season.
They really might have. Like, what has been going... Oh, it's werewolves. Gotcha. No. Nothing would have helped that season. That's the truth of that. So it's fun. It's not... Again, we're only in the second issue here, and there's a little bit of weird... Like, it could be very good, or it could be... meh.
Right?
You know, like, it's one of those. I think it's either going to be really good or it's just going to be meh. Like, I need to get through an arc of it before I start telling everybody, drop your shit and go buy this series! But I'm intrigued so far. And, finally on my list, last but not, actually maybe mildly least, is the Warhammer 40K comic. The first issue that we read, I was pretty blown away by it. I really liked it. I was really excited. I love the Dark Angels. I love the Iron Warriors. I was excited. Like, yeah, this is going to be awesome. I'm so excited. The second issue... So it's only a four-issue series, and it's giving me a little bit of pause. Because for one thing, I think they have a lot of plates spinning in the air. You have this planet where I know that I obviously understand that all of the plot lines are eventually going to converge onto this one planet, this Exerion. And you have the Dark Angels going down there to try to find evidence of the stuff that happened during the heresy. You have the Iron Warriors going there to try to hunt something. You have a watch station which looks eerily like a space hulk above this planet that this Inquisitor is going to look for evidence about the bad evidence against the Dark Angels. And then you have this Dark Angel going off to a planet that's neighboring Exerion to be like, yo, shit's about to get fucked here. It's a lot of moving pieces, and I'm sure it'll all come together. The question is whether or not it'll come together in a satisfactory manner. My two biggest... The things that have... I'm like, whoa, wait, what? The two things that are giving me pause is, one, they haven't revealed yet who is helping this Inquisitor Sabathiel figure out the stuff with the Dark Angels. I'm assuming it's going to be a fallen angel. They keep referring to it as a thing, which would go in... would make sense with... Chaos denizens. The fact that she's taking this thing's word at face value is a little concerning to me. And when they show up on the Space Hulk, they find these dead Dark Angels, and she's like, boom, there's the evidence we needed. And I'm like, you see dead Dark Angels, and you're like, well, clearly there's some crazy shit going on here. Like, you realize it was the Horus Heresy, right? And yeah, lots of loyalist legions were killed. Like, anything could have happened here. They haven't yet found that smoking gun.
It's not even... They don't even have to be from the Horus Heresy.
Right?
They could have died in another battle or something.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, Carrie, because here comes my second point. They said that nobody's been to this planet in 10,000 years because it's been covered by a warp storm. Right? And... okay, we'll talk more about that in a second. But, so, alright, so it's probably safe to assume, right? These guys have been there for 10,000 years because nobody's getting near this because of this warp storm. First off, the Iron Warriors have planets within the Eye of Terror. So I don't see how a warp storm would give them, like, pause. They don't give a shit. They'll just throw bodies at it. Actually, a lot of the Imperium would do that too. But, hey. That's a little... okay, whatever. But they say that during the heresy, a terrible weapon was used that claimed a million lives in one fell swoop, and that the subsequent purge of life created the psychic warp storm that... because, you know, the warp does love sweet, sweet psychic energy, so I'm totally going with that, actually, because the warp would be like, oh, hello, what? But so it's rendered this entire system impassable. So... the Imperium of Mankind, and actually Chaos as well, has had something called Exterminatus in their grasp for a very long time. And Exterminatus, for people who aren't well-versed in the Warhammer 40K universe, is when they can literally drop a bomb on a planet and kill the entire thing like that. And so
didn't they, when we read the first Primarchs book, didn't they have the Exterminatus then? Cause
they they've had it.
Yeah, because they talked about using it for that one planet, and that was back when the Primarchs, so right before the Horus Heresy.
So, Exterminatus is yet, as with almost all of the technology in the Warhammer 40k universe, it is all a product of the Dark Age of Technology, which was like in 15k or 10k. It's all a product of that. So, and it, obviously it's, you know, great power, great responsibility, let's not use this all the time. Even Chaos kind of pulls back from using the Exterminatus. They, so I'm really curious as to what this weapon would be that just that killing a million people, because a planet has, you know, more than a million people usually, and that doesn't create a warp storm. So I'm just a little curious as to what's going on here. And again,
did the Emperor come to visit?
Right. Like, maybe if he showed up and was like, boom, motherfuckers, I'd understand it. But
or he needed some souls, you know.
There's also that. Yeah, like, good God, you would think that there'd be a warp storm just constantly over Terra.
I've been wondering that, too.
Like, oh my God. It's...
But maybe that's why he keeps all those psychers around him? To prevent the warp storm?
That's not quite how it works.
I'm just throwing out theories.
I know, that's what
from
I'm saying.
From a
like,
newbie.
You've got to explain, like... And I'm sure there's going to be an explanation, like they're going to come back and say, here's how we did it. But again, in a four-issue arc, I'm not sure it's going to be a satisfying explanation. And I feel like that needs to be explained. Both of those things.
Maybe.
So
I'm not seeing the warp storm thing, why the Iron Warriors wouldn't go through that, be explained, to be honest. When I read the second issue, I had no idea what was going on, because...
That's okay, I don't really either.
Because, I mean, I am a Warhammer newbie, and so you get, like Jen said, there's four factions going on, and the art is not entirely clear, like, who was with who and who is going on, so I have no idea, and I'm not that familiar with the verse of, I know who the Iron Warriors are, I know who the Inquisition is, I just learned who the Dark Angels are. So that was, you know, part of it. But there's, like she said, there's so much going on. Like when she said there's only four issues, I was like, there's no way. And I looked at the front cover and sure enough, it said 2 out of 4. And I don't know. And in my personal opinion, it needs to be explained in a way that not only Warhammer 40k veterans get, but maybe newcomers to the franchise can also kind of at least maybe not fully understand, but get intrigued enough about the 40k universe to do research on it and to, you know, delve back into the lore. Because I'm sorry, you can't expect every comic book reader to have, you know, being part of the, what, 10, 15 years of Warhammer games and novels. I mean, so, I don't know.
Yeah. It's, yes, I agree with that. And even as a veteran, I mean, I've been reading Warhammer novels for a really long time. Let's not talk about that right now. So, we've been reading for quite a bit. I own a disgusting amount of the Black Library's catalog. They owe me a Christmas card. But you're covering this much in four issues, and I'm just not sure that there's going to be a satisfactory way to do that. And I had said when Carrie first contacted, oh my God, I just got a press release and Titan's doing this, and oh, that's excellent. I had said, I was like, you know, there have been comics in the past and they haven't been very good. There's even a Dan Amnett one that's probably the best of the ilk, but it was written, I don't know if he wasn't into it or if it was written before he really hit his stride. It's kind of a meh series as well. It deals with an Inquisitor finding a Chaos weapon in which they had taken a blunter and put her like in a magnifying thing that would like amplify her.
Oh my gosh.
Power. Right? Yeah, that'd be a bit of a problem. But it just wasn't very good, and it had these same problems where they're just trying to cram so much in, and ultimately it feels like they're just like, nah, there you go. Like, that should be good enough for you. Take it or leave it. So I gave this one a yep, but this is another one that I was kind of like, yeah. We'll see. we're going to see on this one. If they might stick the landing, like they might pull something out of their ass next issue, and I'm going to be like, oh, wow, I was so wrong. This is fantastic. But I'm not filled with hope right now.
It will have to be the next issue.
Mm-hmm.
It has to, because they can't wrap everything up in one issue for issue four.
No, they really can't. But who knows? Maybe they'll try.
That's a shame, because I don't understand why. Because I'm speaking like a newbie here, or as a newbie, but to me, from the books that I've been reading with Warhammer 40K, it doesn't have to be a complicated story to be good.
No.
I mean, like take the Ultramarines first trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
None of those books were that complicated. And you may argue, oh, it's because the Ultramarines were involved and they're boring, whatever. Okay, well then let's look at the Eisenhorn. Like, I'm in the middle of reading the second book. It's a little more complicated because he's got the Inquisitors going. At the same time, the plot line is very straightforward with what he is doing and how he's investigating it. And I don't understand why they feel the need for a comic to let's just juggle all this and see what happens. See how many balls we catch. Doesn't make any sense to me.
And I've actually argued that, so the Eisenhorn trilogy, that first series of books is amazing. They're very simple. They're very straightforward. The plot is very straightforward. There's a lot of moving parts to them, but the core plot is pretty much a straight line. I love the Eisenhorn books. I like the Ravener books, which follow Eisenhorn, but they get more complicated, much more complicated, and at times it kind of suffers as a result. Like, there's times where you're reading it and you're like, this is really needlessly convoluted right now.
It's complex and people confuse, like maybe this would be a great podcast topic for another day, about people confusing, you know, being grown up and adults with being overly complex and complicated. It doesn't have to be that way. I mean, you can have a very simple idea and still make it for adults or make it for kids and make it, you know, a fully fledged idea and be deep and have meaning.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. So, yeah, we may have to do that one next time. But that's all I'm reading right now, that's all.
Right.
I'm still reading too goddamn much. But I think next podcast, which will be not next week, but the week after that, I will have Black Monday Murders, Paper Girls, and a few other things that I'm really excited to talk about, too. So this week, I have good, like, we both had good stuff, like some of our good stuff, and then some of our stuff. This stuff exists.
Yeah, I think by then, like, I'll have a new Titans, I'll have a new Teen Titans, new Mighty Thor, we'll see what the Hammer's up to. And
the Hammer.
I wish I was joking about that, but yeah, see what that old Hammer is up to. I think that should be it, because like I think last week was my killer week. I had like 6 release, and so it's like, okay, yeah, whatever. I might have a new Flash, but that's probably going to be a big whatever.
Right?
Because Flash. Oh my God, I don't understand. I don't understand DC. I think I just need to give up trying. But yes, I should have Mighty Thor, Teen Titans, and Titans. So speaking of DC, so there you go. Maybe another X-Men 92, which I'm kind of... Yeah, that's...
All the X-Men's.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting series in that it does recapture, like, the good old 90s. But at the same time... It was the first issue was just great, but then we bring in the Brood and now Apocalypse. I'm like, okay, I forgot about all the shit from the 90s that I hated. I can't stand Apocalypse.
Mm-mm.
So yeah,
that sucks.
And again, this is also another case of too much. Like, we got the Brood, we got Apocalypse, we got this mercenary coming in, they've been beamed to another planet, they're trying to figure out how to get back. Oh, the X-Brood. Remember the Brood that's been mutated? So now they're the X-Brood?
Yes. Oh, right.
That's the thing. So we have, like, all these things going on. And about the only thing that's been interesting is the fact that they said that the Flaming Lips were actually mutants. I'm like, I believe that.
Yeah, that seems legit, actually.
So,
but oh god.
Yeah.
So maybe thank you for reminding me why I don't read any of the X-Men anymore.
Oh, but the Uncanny X-Men's really good.
I had to figure out what to get rid of to want to read that.
Yeah, see, I got rid of Green Arrow, and then I was like, woohoo, I'm free, and then picked up Cyborg. Like, oh, crap. So, I don't have room for anything else. Yeah.
It's a common problem.
Yeah.
So
it's like I was telling Jen the other day, like this is like my weekly thing, like, where's all my money go? And then Wednesday morning happens, Comixology alert, your subscriptions have arrived. I'm like, oh yeah. That's for
the right. That's where all that money goes.
So hey, DC and Marvel, do you want to hook me up? I would love it. And Jen needs like Image people.
Image. Please help me, Image, please, so I can mainline all of your stuff. Because I will mainline the fuck out of it.
She will read all the Image. All the time.
Just all the Image.
All the Image.
It's, you know, it is one of the reasons that I do admit this, like, and I don't review all of them and recommend all of them because I've read some garbage. But it's one of the reasons that I read a lot of Dark Horse comics and that I'm more willing to, like, give a shot to Dark Horse because I do, we're on their press list, and so I'll get some of their stuff, and I'm like, you know what, I never would have checked the series out before, but I will read this, and then now I wouldn't have checked that series out before. And, like, any of the Aliens series. Fuck you, Aliens. God, so fucking engineers. We're not going to talk about that now, because then I'll just start screaming, and then we will be yelling about comics. Hey-o!
That sounds like a great think piece for later.
It does, yes.
Because we do yell about comics. That's the whole point of this.
It is.
Yeah. Yep.
Indeed.
But this yelling session is coming to an end. So, and I will double check it. Hopefully this definitely did record. We did do a test. So We did do a test. But we do thank you for tuning in and listening. We did decide last time that you won't hear now, but we're going to go every other week. So we're going to be bi-weekly, because we decided if we went monthly, we would be here for like 4 hours going over all the different arcs, or we'd forget important stuff. And so it's a problem, but we read so many comics, we just thought it'd be best to get together and talk about all of it. So you can find us on iTunes as well as Google Play. I will have the links in this post. And of course, we ask that you like, subscribe, and donate $5. No, I'm just kidding. Just, you know, if you do like us, please subscribe. And of course, you know, put a review or comments either on our Twitter. Our Twitter is @yellaboutcomics, because I couldn't do yelling about comics. So it's @yellaboutcomics. And the site is yellingaboutcomics.com. I've been Carrie Honey, and this is Jen Bozier, and we are signing off, and we will yell at you in 2 weeks.